Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar, broadcasting from my home studio. Coming up later in the program, how much is Pennsylvania subsidizing fossil fuels? But up front, older Pennsylvanians are vulnerable anytime, but especially now during the coronavirus pandemic. Those 60 and older are at risk of becoming more seriously ill, and if they contract the COVID-19 virus, they are in much more danger of actually dying. Aging Pennsylvanians are facing a lot of stress right now, high COVID risk, difficulty accessing vaccines, and social isolation that have changed their lives. What can be done to improve support for older Pennsylvanians during this critical time? Joining us is Pennsylvania Secretary of Aging, Robert Torres. Secretary Torres, welcome to the program. Right now, scheduling and getting a COVID-19 vaccination is the number one issue in Pennsylvania, especially for older Pennsylvanians. What is the Department of Aging doing to get more people vaccinated?
Good morning, Scott, and thank you for inviting me to be with you this morning. And you're absolutely right. With the limited supply of vaccine, it has been very challenging for older adults to get those appointments. We're working very closely with our area agencies on aging. These are primarily county-based organizations. There's 52 of them throughout Pennsylvania that serve all 67 counties. We're working with them to support their efforts at the local level to help older adults get support and get scheduled for vaccine appointments. At the local level, I've highlighted Butler County Area Agency on Aging over the past 2 weeks because they have developed a process where they're working with a local hospital who's allocating a set amount of vaccines for them to help with registering and scheduling appointments for older adults in their county. They're also working together to vaccinate older adults in senior high-rise apartment buildings, and they're using staff that are currently not working, for example, senior community center staff, since most senior centers are closed, have been helping with the administrative work related to trying to vaccinate older adults in, for example, a high-rise building. We have other counties like Montgomery County that are working with their county health department and a software partner to use a software application that helps with scheduling. So it links up the Area Agency on Aging and the Department of Health, and together they're working on, again, pre-registering older adults, getting them scheduled. And although they have a waiting list, at least it's positioning them to move quickly once more vaccine becomes available. And in Lackawanna County, just to give you another example, their Area Agency on Aging is working with a nonprofit to help man a 211 line in that county, and they've been working to set up schedules, and they just started earlier this month and have already assisted about 1,000 individuals. So there's a lot of local partnerships, collaborations going on. At our department, we have what's known as the PACENET Pharmaceutical Program. It's a prescription benefit program for older adults 65 and over. We have about over 275,000 enrollees in that program, and we started proactively reaching out to them to see if they've received their vaccine. We're looking at our files to identify those individuals that have the most chronic conditions that should be at the top of the list, and we're actively reaching out to try and support them to get them scheduled. And we also have a program that's called the Pennsylvania Link to Aging and Disability Resources. So anyone who's over 60 years old and or has a disability, is living with a disability, we can support them as well. If they call into our PA Link service line, we will try to support them as best we can to get them scheduled, at least to see where we can get them on a waiting list.
Well, you know, one of the things that strikes me about this, I mean, Secretary Torres, this is relatively new. I mean, it's just been a couple of weeks that you and Governor Wolf appeared at a press conference where you said that the area agencies on aging would be coordinating a lot of these activities to get vaccinations for seniors. I have to ask the question, what's taken so long? And the other part of it is, you know, we have 67 counties. Not all of them have area agencies on aging. But it sounds as if we could have 50 different strategies to attack this rather than one consistent. Maybe a county can look toward Butler County as an example of what's working and try to replicate that. But why do we have such, you know, so many different ways of attacking this?
Well, I mean, really, at the local level, they know their environment. Butler County, again, started their partnership with their local hospital at the beginning of this pandemic. So they built that relationship. And when the vaccination process started, they came up with a procedure that works for them. I know recently in the news, Lancaster, for example, was exploring the possibility of mass vaccine clinics using an empty Bonton store that is no longer operational. So a lot of the counties are looking at the facilities that they have and trying to be proactive in their planning efforts, again, so that when the vaccine supply does become more reliable and gets closer to meeting the demand that we have, most of the counties will be ready with their plans and will hopefully be able to execute quickly so that we can get as many people vaccinated as possible.
But I'll ask that question again. What took so long? I mean, we've had the vaccine now since December. Supply is an issue. But what has taken so long to get these plans together?
Well, again, I think, you know, there's two separate parts of this vaccination process. You have vaccines coming in through pharmacies that are supporting long-term care residents and staff. So that's one side of the process. Then you have vaccines that are coming in that are being allocated through the state, depending on population and different criteria that they set up. I think, you know, initially there was a willingness to have a wide provider network. Some of that has been scaled back because now Department of Health is trying to get you know, vaccine providers who are more efficient and can vaccinate more individuals, higher allocation so that we can get more people vaccinated quickly, and then they'll open it up once the supply of vaccines increases. So I think there's been a lot of planning efforts, but some of it at the local level until we saw how things unfolded over the past few weeks have started developing in terms of county government, area agencies on aging, local hospitals, local pharmacies. One of the things that we're doing, and again, with the area agencies on aging, if they don't have these types of partnerships or collaborations in the works, as a department, we're using our resources. For example, with our PACE program, we have relationships with a lot of pharmacists. So where we can make connections, at the local level or help to make those connections, we're happy to do that and are actively working with the area agencies to sort that out with them.
By the way, if you have a question or comment for Pennsylvania Secretary of Aging Robert Torres, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are @smarttalkwitf. Again, the phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Secretary, we've received several emails already. Here's one from Amy. She's in Hummelstown. She says, why is this county based? My doctor and my medical system is in Lancaster County, but I live in Dauphin County. If these are county based, what am I supposed to do?
Well, again, you can certainly call your area agency on aging. If you're there are resources, pharmacists that are eligible vaccine providers, but if you have a healthcare provider in Lancaster County, then I would encourage you to call your healthcare provider to coordinate your scheduling. If that's what the email is referring to in terms of scheduling the vaccine.
Mm-hmm. Secretary, we know that supply of the vaccine is a challenge for everyone. I'm talking about all counties, the state, all states across the country. But older people are facing some challenges as well that not everyone has had to deal with. That is access to computers, difficulty in navigating online, transportation. Now, I know when you talk about support, those are some of the things that you're referring to. But what specifically are you doing, especially to help those who may not be familiar with how to navigate online, or those who have a transportation issue getting to a place where shots are being given?
Well, again, the area agencies on aging typically will support older adults in their communities. So if an older adult has those kinds of needs, I would encourage them to call their local area agencies on aging. I do want to clarify that, you know, there's, as you mentioned earlier, there's 52 different area agencies on aging. Some are larger and have a lot more resource and capacity. Some are smaller and may not have the same level of ability to provide certain support. But I know some of the counties are working with PennDOT to leverage the free and share ride program. I know local public transportation have made decisions to provide free transportation to vaccine sites. So there is transportation support out there, and your local area agency on aging would have access to that information and be able to support you in that regard.
Yes.
And then, you know, I also want to mention that as of last week, the Department of Health, Acting Secretary Allison Beam, issued a directive that all vaccine providers must have a telephone option to help with scheduling appointments. Because you're right, older adults have struggled with navigating, online applications to get themselves scheduled for a vaccine. We've heard a lot of complaints in that regard in terms of their ability to navigate online applications for scheduling. So as of last week, effective February 19th, all vaccine providers should be providing a telephonic option for registration.
Yeah, that's something that I just noticed this morning, that there's a report in Philadelphia. Now, Philadelphia is running its own system, vaccination system, as opposed to the other 66 counties in the state, that more people, older people especially, are using the phone, calling to make appointments rather than doing it online. So they're choosing the old-fashioned way to do it. We have an email here from Sheila. It says, my husband runs a senior center in Harrisburg that is available for use as a vaccine center. So our local school gyms. We have a population of many seniors with limited mobility, and setting up sites that are super local would be of great help to the eldest in our community. Please discuss if there are such plans, and if not, please explain. Now, I don't know how much the Department of Aging has an input into where actual shots are being administered, but the point that she's making about these, about some of these places being super local, to use her words, that would seem to make a lot of sense, especially for older Pennsylvanians.
It does make a lot of sense, and I can tell you that most of the community senior centers have been closed throughout this pandemic. As of about 2 weeks ago, 95% throughout Pennsylvania have been closed. So that's why I mentioned in Butler County, they utilize the staff of the community senior centers to help with the administrative requirements of registering older adults, and then even monitoring them in apartment high rises. I have been approached, I live in Dauphin County, and I have been approached a few weeks ago about conducting a vaccine site. I do not have, you know, the authority, but certainly those kinds of options are being considered. Area agencies throughout the throughout Pennsylvania that actually oversee senior community centers, have volunteered their sites for you know, vaccine clinics. So that is a possibility. I think, you know, the reality is those sites have to be evaluated in terms of making sure the logistics and that it can be done safely in terms of bringing people in and the coordination that would be needed. But I see those as an option, as long as they could be done safely and all the logistical and administrative requirements could be met.
Well, how can someone
to get it done effectively?
How can someone volunteer their site? What would the process be?
Well, they can certainly let us know at the Department of Aging. I meet every Monday morning with the network of area agencies on aging. I've been doing that since the beginning of the pandemic. So we keep very close alignment in terms of information that's coming from the Department of Health, any guidance that I've had to provide in terms of adapting how we deliver services to older adults. For example, we had to cut back on a lot of face-to-face visits of older adults during the pandemic to keep everyone safe. So we've had to adjust how we deliver services, and every Monday I meet with them. In fact, I'll be meeting with them at 10 o'clock this morning for a half hour. It's my opportunity to share updates with them, and they let me know what's going on around the state. So they can certainly send Department of Aging an email or call and let us know that that's something they'd like to consider. And then we coordinate within the administration. We have a lot of cross-agency discussions and planning and comparing notes to see, what options are available that we should be considering, like this one. You know, can we start when vaccine supplies increase, opening it up and considering senior centers or other local sites that might make sense to do so.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR news and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. Our guest during this portion of the program is Pennsylvania Secretary of Aging Robert Torres. We're talking about a number of issues having to do with getting vaccinations for older Pennsylvanians, and we'll be talking about some other issues as well. Our phone number is 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalk@witf. Again, the phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Secretary Torres, we're getting a lot of emails, people expressing frustration with calling or going online and not able to get appointments. You mentioned that phone number, and again, this is something that's relatively new. What is that phone number where people can call to try to make an appointment?
Well, if they're a PACE enrollee, if they're enrolled in our PACE pharmaceutical program, the number they can call is 1-800-225-7223. We also have our PA Link program, and that number will be 1-800-753-8827.
Okay, thank you very much.
And again, we'll do our best. The limited supply is a challenge, and believe me, we've received a lot of calls, so I understand the frustration and the anxiety that people have that want to get the vaccine. But we'll do our best to make the connections, or at least to get people on a waiting list so that they can be contacted. I think, at this point, trying to be as proactive as we can and minimize the level of frustration that I know is out there is something that we're working hard to do.
We have an email here from Linda. She says, I'm a registered nurse who works in the geriatric mental health ward in Harrisburg. I have older African-American clients with multiple comorbid conditions who do not have computers nor some transportation to get registered for the vaccine. Has anyone considered connecting with the Black churches to outreach to this community? And we've actually received a couple other emails talking about churches overall, that is, for older Pennsylvanians, that is their connection to the community. This might go back to what you were talking about earlier, but our church, can churches get involved?
I think churches can play an important role, especially in the African-American community. One of the things that I've been doing recently, I've met with the governor's affinity commission. So there's advisory. The governor has advisory commissions that report up to him for the, for example, the Governor's Advisory Commission on Latino Affairs, Governor's Advisory Commission on African American Affairs, the Nation, Pacific Islander Affairs, and LGBTQ Affairs. So I've met with each of the executive directors, and the reason that I've met with them is because we want to make sure that we're being equitable in terms of the vaccine distribution. With regard to the African American community, I know there's a lot of distrust out there in terms of, you know, vaccines, and we want trusted sources within the community, like churches or other leaders in the African American community that can help us get the word out and help to address questions, concerns that may be out there that we can address in terms of the safety of the vaccine, the pros and cons, or any other concerns they have that would make them skeptical about taking the vaccine. So it's an important subject, especially we want to make sure we're being very effective in our outreach to diverse communities and being responsive to their concerns, and local trusted sources can help us with that.
I just wanted to follow up on something you just said. Go ahead, whatever you say.
I'm sorry, I was also going to say, I have a meeting, for example, with the Governor's Advisory Commission on Latino Affairs. I have a meeting this week with their commissioners. They have 32 commissioners that are appointed and represent communities throughout Pennsylvania. And this is the type of discussion I will be having with them as well.
I just wanted to follow up with something you just said. We had an email from a listener that says, please refrain from stating that African Americans are vaccine hesitant. We are very much like other groups in that collectively we desperately want the vaccine. So just wanted to make that point from a listener as well, even though we have heard others say that African Americans are more skeptical, and polls show that they say they are less likely to get the vaccine right now. Have someone here, Wayne, I was looking for Wayne's email, huh, because I'm trying to wade through a number of emails here. Wayne says, I have an uncle who was homebound. Is there an option through aging to bring vaccinations to a senior's home instead of them traveling to a vaccination site?
Yes, with our PACE program. Now, again, resources are still limited, but that's one of the areas that we're looking at in terms of seniors who are homebound. So that once we know that's an issue, we can make appropriate arrangements. Our PACE program isn't there yet, but that's one of the areas that they're going to be, you know, looking at their files of people that we have enrolled. And if they're unable to move from their home, then we will work to see if we can get get resources there. Similar to, again, what was done in Butler, if we have the opportunity to encourage mass vaccinations at senior high-rise complexes, I think those are definitely good options that planning groups or task force at the local level can be working on. So I think you're going to see more of that happening as the supply increases in the next couple of weeks and months.
Let's take a phone call from George in Camp Hill. George, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking the call. I'm one of these people that's very frustrated with the website and the inaccurate information that's on the website. I was up this morning, clicked on a site to go to, and you know, said we're no longer receiving vaccines, but it was on the healthcare website. Another site you go on, and you wait for 8 minutes, and then after you wait, it tells you they don't have any vaccines. I mean, it just seems like a time waste. It needs to be more efficient.
George, thank you very much for your call. Secretary, that efficiency is, again, what I'm hearing from listeners all over the place, that, asking what I asked earlier about why it's taken so long. And the question that George has is that, you know, that it seems as though this website is not efficient for those who are even using it.
Yep. Again, I think the Department of Health has been working on that over the past several weeks. Part of the problem was the timing of reporting in what was happening out in the field. Part of the directive that was issued last week by the acting Secretary of Health was that vaccine providers need to move a certain percentage of their supply within 7 days. That, along with, requiring very specific timelines in terms of making sure that they're inputting their data within 24 hours should hopefully alleviate some of the challenges we've had with that time lag that caused the frustration that George just expressed in his phone call. So I see it smoothing out because now very clear expectations have been set about moving the vaccine quicker and reporting in quicker as well so that the information is more up to date than it has been in the past.
We have a question here from a listener saying that he doesn't think that he's getting useful information on today's program. He said, I've tried phoning the Department of Aging and cannot get through, busy signal. I've tried calling the Cumberland County Agency on Aging twice and cannot get through. I've checked the Pennsylvania Department of Health map several times daily for several weeks. I've not been able to schedule an appointment. I've signed up for notifications about vaccines at every site I can find. No luck yet. The Department of Health map does not have phone numbers. I thought they were required to. I'm totally frustrated and continue to be frustrated. And the information on this show is just not cutting it. So I guess I have to take some of the criticism as well if we're not getting the information out there. But, you know, Secretary, I'm sure you're well aware. These are the kind of frustrations that people have. What is a gentleman like this supposed to do?
Well, again, I would encourage you to call our PACE number. You know, we've just ramped up over the past few weeks. Part of the challenge is, again, just like the gentleman has expressed frustration, a lot of people are calling in at the same time, and we have to be able to handle the capacity, the flow of the calls that are coming in. But I would encourage you, call 1-800-225-7223, and we'll see if we can help you. I apologize if you've called into our general number at the Department of Aging and have not received a response, but we'll do our best to help you if you call that number.
Secretary, in New York, the administration of Governor Andrew Cuomo is accused of underreporting the number of COVID deaths in nursing homes. To be clear, that is not an allegation that has been made in Pennsylvania, but like New York, the Wolf administration directed that some COVID patients go to nursing homes where thousands of deaths have occurred. Your job with the Department of Aging is to protect and advocate for older Pennsylvanians. Was that decision advocating for their safety?
Can you repeat the question, Scott? I'm sorry.
Your job as Department of Secretary of Aging, the Department of Aging, is to advocate for older Pennsylvanians. Especially early on in the pandemic, when the administration made the decision to send some COVID positive patients to nursing homes, do you think that was the best way to advocate for their safety?
Well, I have to defer to the Department of Health on those types of decisions. You know, when residents are sent back, I think that, you know, the public has to understand that whether it's a nursing home or a personal care home, these are their homes, and adjustments had to be made to provide for the safety of the resident and the resident who was being sent back and other residents that are there. But those are decisions that were made, you know, by the Department of Health, and I would have to defer to them on the public health rationale behind it, as well as the fact that residents in long-term care facility, those are their homes. And while adjustments had to be made, that was a decision that was made at the time.
Well, a couple of points to that, Secretary. Whether it's their homes or not, you wouldn't send someone back into a home that has been condemned or is unsafe. And you, as the Secretary of Aging, these are older people. You had no input into that decision?
No. The decision that were being made at the Department of Health, I want to make clear, we collaborate with the Department of Health. So any guidance that is being issued. On our side, we compare, make sure that we're in alignment with the guidance they have to follow from the CDC, because in a lot of cases, we were required basically to follow CDC and CMS guidelines. So yes, we do collaborate, we discuss, we plan together, but those kinds of decisions that were being made, those were more decisions being made from the public health experts.
In hindsight, do you think it was the correct decision?
Well, it was the decision that was made. And I, you know, at the time we, you know, we were working our way through this, and I had to defer to this, you know, to the Department of Health on those types of issues.
Mm-hmm. Secretary, we only have a few minutes left. Many Pennsylvanians, especially older Pennsylvanians, are isolated and have been for almost a year now, haven't been able to get out much at all, but especially those persons who were going for in-person meal, those people, I should say, going for in-person meals or to congregate at area agencies on aging or at senior centers. What's being done to help those people, especially now, when it comes to their mental or emotional health?
Yeah. Well, social isolation, when this whole pandemic started, along with making sure that older adults were being fed throughout the pandemic, especially those that were alone, was a top priority for the department and the area agencies on aging. I can tell you I was on a healthy aging conference call with 16 other states last Thursday, and every single state, believed that social isolation was a top priority. We were actually working, our council, we have a Pennsylvania Council on Aging that was working on social isolation as a top priority before the pandemic. So we were ahead of the game in terms of addressing the concern. The Council on Aging is made up of 16 appointed older adults, and then there's 5 regional councils of volunteers. So it's about a total of 70 older adults throughout Pennsylvania that help advise the department and area agencies on aging. They developed an online resource tool that's called Strengthening Older Lives Online. And that was their attempt to really try to do something to get some resources out to older adults. And they've been, it's been well received. We have also worked with AARP, who gave us some funding, and we provided over 100 cell phones and tablets to skilled nursing facilities that perhaps didn't have as many resources as they could to help older adults stay in contact and be connected with their families and loved ones. So we provided that to 49 skilled nursing facilities in 37 counties. We've partnered with Slippery Rock University. This was a pilot program we did in the fall where we connected over 100 older adults with students who were taking courses in recreational therapy and other aging-related courses. That program was so well received that it's now in its second semester with even more students that enrolled and more area agencies on aging. It started out with just Butler and Mercer County, and now we have about 7 area agencies on aging that are recruiting older adults to participate in that program. And we've received incredible feedback from both older adults and their students. Pittsburgh Post-Gazette recognized it as a model program that we should expand throughout Pennsylvania and even the nation. So it was really positive. Our Pennsylvania, the Pennsylvania Link to Aging and Disability Resources Center, we applied for a grant and received funding to help support older adults. Again, that would be individuals 60 plus and or living with a disability. And since we started back in mid-October, we've been helping older adults through that program. We've helped at least 100 older adults with assistive devices and technology to support them in their home. And our long-term care ombudsman, in terms of long-term care facilities, have purchased what we call pad bots. So these are basically little robots that they control, and they can get into long-term care facilities to visit residents that have concerns or grievances that they wish to discuss with an ombudsman. So we've been doing a lot leveraging technology, leveraging this intergenerational program, and leveraging our Council on Aging, the work that they've done on social isolation to support older adults throughout Pennsylvania as much as possible.
Pennsylvania Secretary of Aging, Robert Torres. Secretary Torres, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Scott. My pleasure.
By the way, those phone numbers that the Secretary mentioned for PA Link and also PACE are on our website, WITF.org/smarttalk. If you go to the description of today's program, the story about today's program, you can find those numbers if you didn't catch them. I'm sure if you go to the Department of Aging website as well, you can get those phone numbers. But try our best to try to get as many people appointments as possible, help as much as possible. We've received a lot of emails hearing your frustration. Trying to help as much as we can, but see what we can do. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar.
For a deeper look at the changing tide of healthcare, check out WITF's Transforming Health at transforminghealth.org, a partnership of WITF, WellSpan Health, and Capital Blue Cross.
America's dependence on fossil fuels is complicated, and it's a hotly debated topic. The environmental organization, in fact, the state's largest environmental group, Penn Future, has published their third in a series of reports looking into one of the lesser-known factors that they say is keeping Americans tethered to non-renewable energies, and that's fossil fuel subsidies. Joining us now is Emily Persico. She's a policy analyst for Penn Future and author of the report, Buried Out of Sight, Uncovering Pennsylvania's Hidden Fossil Fuel Subsidies. Emily Persico, how did this report come to be?
Yeah, good morning, Scott. First, yeah, just thanks for having me on the show. So this report actually, or Penn Future's reporting on fossil fuel subsidies actually goes back a decade. So we had our first report back in 2011, our second in 2015, and now this is just the most kind of recent, the most recent iteration of it now here in 2021.
Mm-hmm. So I have to say the title of the report, Buried Out of Sight, Uncovering Pennsylvania's Hidden Fossil Fuel Subsidies. It's a provocative name. How did that name, and maybe that explains a little bit, how did that come to be?
Yeah, so that name, the Buried Out of Sight, is actually kind of a little snippet that's pulled out of kind of down at the analysis section. After basically doing this research for months, it turned out that so many of these fossil fuels subsidies are hard to find. Often it's hard to figure out the kind of funding that's behind them or where these subsidies are going and who's benefiting from them exactly. So just after all this analysis and after so many unknowns, you know, that little piece just really stuck out to us by the end and just made its way up to the title.
If you have a question or comment about this report, about subsidies, fossil fuel subsidies having to do with or renewable energies, I guess I should say as well, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, the phone number, 1-800-729-7532. So, Emily, what were the major findings of this report?
Yeah, so in total, we found over 50 different subsidies in Pennsylvania that came to a total cost of $3.8 billion in fiscal year 2019. So looking back at our 2015 report, that's actually a 14% increase. So we're seeing fossil fuel subsidies actually go up. And then looking a few years into the future, seeing kind of what's budgeted in the coming years, we see that these fossil fuel subsidies are likely to continue increasing at a time when they should be decreasing. In addition to all those subsidies that we found, we also found $11.1 billion in external costs from unconventional gas development. So that's things like public health burdens, environmental degradation, and climate impacts. So basically, we're giving the fossil fuel industry billions of dollars, and they're paying us back with billions of dollars of these kind of costs and liabilities.
So, okay, let's look at that a little bit closer. You said at a time they're increasing, at a time when they should be decreasing. Now, as an environmental group, Penn Future, that's your opinion. But there would be others who would say that these subsidies, that they create jobs, the fossil fuel industry, natural gas in particular, has created jobs in Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania's second leading natural gas producer in the country. So is that an opinion, or maybe explain that opinion, why you say they should be decreasing rather than increasing?
Yeah, so, I mean, we've been seeing international institutions calling for the phasing out of fossil fuel subsidies for years now, you know, and it's not just environmental organizations, you know, it's the International Monetary Fund, the EU, and a host of other kind of international agencies. And now the federal government is kind of stepping up and doing the same. So, you know, it seems like many of the world's powers are kind of going in the opposite direction, because We do need to phase out fossil fuels in order to address climate change. That is like a scientific fact that we know. And part of achieving that is phasing out fossil fuel subsidies. A lot of these subsidies actually did go, as you said, to the shale gas and petrochemical industry. We see about over half of them, so about $2 billion in fiscal year 2019. And a lot of those are to kind of achieve these community and economic development goals. But over and over again, we see that they're not achieving their intended goals, and they're actually causing many other kind of consequences to local communities, again, and those kind of public health burdens and environmental degradation.
How do you respond, you know, something that I had mentioned a little bit earlier, when you hear people say, well, you know, this is something that it's an industry that creates jobs. It has helped some communities across the state. How do you respond to that?
Yeah, I would say that just digging into these negative externalities, you know, we in the report, we go through one by one. And negative externalities is just kind of the wonky term for those costs, basically. So we go through one by one, and we see that there is very limited kind of signs that people are experiencing. You know, a few people here and there have experienced the benefits, but by and large, what we see is that there is just so much damage, you know, and a lot of this damage is some of it we're paying, you know, as taxpayers. So in terms of kind of doing the environmental remediation, that's something that we all pay for. But in local communities, it's beyond that. You know, a lot of these communities are experiencing, you know, they have development right in their backyard or nearby or their neighbor's backyard. And they experience the health consequences from that, and air pollution, and, you know, sometimes their water gets contaminated. So things like that. So there are some benefits to some specific people, but by and large, we're just seeing that there are just so many more costs.
Mm-hmm. In this report, you make recommendations. What are some of those recommendations?
Yeah, so I guess the first one I'll talk about is kind of just getting to the title again, so that buried at a site. And it's really just asking for more transparency. You know, we've been doing this for about a decade now, and unfortunately, there's just still that we don't know so much that we don't know. So there are many subsidies that we kind of identify and we explain, but then in the end, we're unable to come up with even just an estimate for a value on them. So we just have to kind of leave them blank and not calculate them at all, because there's just not enough transparency around them. There's also kind of going again to the economic impacts that you were talking about. We very much see shale gas and petrochemicals, especially, as this economic development strategy. But this economic development strategy isn't really working for us right now. And it's also undermining a lot of our other goals, which include protecting the environment and promoting public health and well-being. So two of our recommendations are really getting at that. One, the transparency, and then again, kind of phasing out some of these fossil fuel subsidies and stop kind of relying on them and looking to them for our economic development goals.
Now, you know, when we're talking about subsidies, I think many people picture that there's a line item in the state budget that X millions of dollars is going for this. From what you have found, that's not necessarily how this works, that there are some tax breaks and other exemptions. Explain that this is not exactly a traditional line item budget that you're referring to as subsidies.
Yeah, Scott, that's a really good point. That's part of why it's so difficult to identify these subsidies, is that it's not just one thing. It's many things scattered throughout our budget, throughout our different kind of departments that we have in government. So when you're looking at these, again, we found over 50 subsidies. And that's because, you know, some of them are specifically for coal or specifically for oil or specifically for, you know, the realty transfer tax for extraction of coal or oil. So they are really detailed and they all kind of serve different purposes and have different impacts. So yes, they are scattered all through our government documents and again, making them very difficult to kind of track down.
Mm. You said that this was difficult to track down. How confident are you when you say that there was $3.8 billion in fiscal year 2019 for Pennsylvania? How confident are you that that figure is accurate?
Yeah, so I am confident that that $3.8 billion sets a good kind of, floor for what we could expect from our fossil fuel subsidies. Again, there were still quite a few subsidies that we were unable to identify the values for. So those were kind of just left at zeros. There were also a couple of cases where we had to do some estimations, and oftentimes we rounded down in those cases or tried to make more conservative estimates. So this is likely kind of the lower end of what we could expect of being the actual full value in Pennsylvania.
We have an email here from Char in Enola. It says, as long as the fossil fuel industry uses lobbyists, the subsidies aren't going away. Just follow the money. And the point that she's making is one that I was going to bring up. This is difficult. I mean, not just lobbyists, but you're going to have legislators that represent areas where natural gas drilling is occurring, you know, where there's fossil fuels, that it is an industry. I mean, that seems like a real tall hill to climb.
Yeah, it most certainly is. And I would say that we make it more difficult by kind of giving in to these interests. You know, the more that we subsidize the fossil fuel industry, the more, benefit they see in lobbying state government. So it's kind of just a feedback loop that we really need to break free from.
Okay, so besides a report that highlights this, what are you saying can be done? I mean, how do you get those legislators who make decisions on this to reduce subsidies?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. All of our recommendations are kind of aimed at legislatures. So we have a series of recommendations. I think it really starts with tracking, again, which is what Penn Future has been doing, tracking these subsidies, being transparent about them so that we can first understand them, because there's just so much that we don't understand. There's not consistent reporting on them. Even when we look at like the Department of Community and Economic Development, for instance, we see that a lot of these are, you know, intended for community and economic development, but we're not tracking things like the success of these programs, how many jobs these programs are actually creating. So if we can kind of start getting more transparency around that and really making sure that we understand that and that the government is responsible for kind of or accountable for these subsidies, then I think we can kind of start getting to a place where we realize that, you know, they're actually doing a lot of harm and they're not creating much benefit for the residents of Pennsylvania. And then we can start phasing them out, you know. I mean, kind of getting into another one of the recommendations, we do immediately recommend the phasing out of $2 billion worth of subsidies. So $2 billion of that $3.8 billion value, so more than half of it, by the elimination of some subsidies that we know, you know, even with this lack of transparency, that we really just need to phase out now. And that just phasing out five of those subsidies would create that $2 billion.
Okay, well, what are those five? That was my next question. If you can make a recommendation, which ones to get rid of right now, what would they be? And I have to say, I only have about a minute left.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're a little more technical. I'll just say, you know, rather than trying to get into all the details in a minute, that they're mostly taxes aimed at production. So there are some subsidies that are aimed at consumption of fossil fuels that make it easier to consume fossil fuels. But these ones are more aimed at the incentivizing production of fossil fuels. So it's kind of on that higher level, if that makes sense.
And the report's being released today. Is that right, Emily?
Yeah, today is the day.
Today is the day. Emily Persico is a policy analyst for Penn Future, author of the report Buried Out of Sight, Uncovering Pennsylvania's Hidden Fossil Fuel Subsidies. Emily Persico, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you so much, Scott.
I'm Scott Lamar. Have yourself a great day.